Are you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Jason Malone and we cover all things link building. And I know as a niche website builder, link building is the last thing you want to do. It's just easier just to focus on content, but obviously the importance of links is as important as ever for ranking your website. So we go into the weeds of link building in terms of what to look for in a link, how he goes about deciding what is a quality link. So it's not just DR or traffic. He has some other metrics that he likes to look at and has a little spreadsheet algorithm that he talks about and how he decides what a quality link is. And we go deep into guest posting. He loves guest posting. It's his favorite form of link building and how you can use guest posts to link back to certain articles, how you can structure guest posts to essentially have the highest relevance and the best quality for the pages that you're trying to rank for. And then we go into a little bit of outreach. Obviously, outreach is obviously somewhat of a barrier to entry to a lot of people, or maybe you are outreaching but not having so much success. So he dives into his processes around getting into the inbox and then how to make your emails stand out. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right. Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today, we have Jason Malone. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. Obviously, you represent the side that most SEOs or niche website builders hate, and that is the link building process. But before we dive into that, do you want to maybe provide a brief background about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I've been doing like affiliate marketing and SEO for like more than 10 years, maybe 12 or 13 years, something like that. And yeah, got into it really like just because I didn't want to get a normal job. I remember one day in like high school realizing like, holy shit, one day I'm going to grow up and have to go and like show up at some office at 9 o'clock and not be allowed to leave until 5. And that just sounded kind of miserable to me. So I think I was always aware that that was like my motivation. And I was really into video games when I was younger. And I think that gave me like an understanding of the internet and sort of primed me pretty well to be able to like be aware of how the internet worked before a lot of other people did. And then through that, just found affiliate marketing with the Warrior Form back in the day. I don't know if you remember that one. And yeah, got into SEO from there. I remember doing like simple like Amazon affiliate sites back then. And I think I even had like a service for like creating affiliate sites for other people, just cheap affiliate sites back then, and kind of went away from SEO then for a while and got into like affiliate marketing with Facebook ads for like several years. I started working with someone else who was already successful at that. I was basically his employee, but he gave me like a really big profit share, and like we did from that for a few years, and then came back to SEO in like 2016-ish. And yeah, was in the bought the Authority Hacker course, was in their pro community, and yeah, realized most people in there really like doing content and really don't like doing the links, just like you said. And so yeah, I was the opposite though for some reason. I don't know why. I wasn't so good at the content, but I really liked the links and like the idea of this that it's just a big numbers game at the end of the day. And so that somehow suited me pretty well. And just kind of organically through that community, through my friends in there, I just started a link building service. Like one of them one day was talking about how difficult it is to build links. And I said, hey, like, I can do it. Like, why don't you give me $1,000? I'll build you like 10 links a month or something like that. And that's how it got started from there. And it's like over 5 years now. And I've just been focused on the link building agency since then, basically.
Nice. Is that Facebook ads affiliate marketing strategy still viable today, or is that kind of dead and gone?
I kind of don't think it is. I remember like there was a group of people, like there weren't many people who were doing it at such a large scale as the guys that I was working for. And anyone who was doing it at such a big scale, like they all knew each other. And I remember that as time would go along, it would get more and more difficult to keep the strategy alive. And every so often, like a new wave of like features from Facebook would come out and make it more difficult. And you'd lose some of these people from the group. They just stopped doing it. And eventually that happened to us too. We stopped doing it at some point. But I did hear after that, in the few years after that, I did hear that there were some people still doing it.
It's
not like all of this, the type of affiliate marketing we were doing is like against the terms of service of Facebook. And so the game then isn't like being a genius marketer or something like that. It's about like, how do you manipulate Facebook's platform as effectively as possible? And it's stuff like you have like, you know, 10 active Facebook ad accounts, and then you have like your farm of like 50 other accounts that you're like warming up so that when Facebook inevitably bans the active accounts that you have, you can bring in more from the farm. And like, so that's how you won the game back then. And you need, every account needs a different phone number, different credit card, different address, like all these things. And I didn't know how to do that, but the guys I was working for did have some sort of way to do this. I don't know. And the people who did the best for the longest, as you know, more and more waves came through of like knocking people out of the game, the ones that did the best eventually got into things like you pay people to use for access to their Facebook account, because like building fake accounts for your farm just didn't work anymore. And so, and then you're asking them like, okay, like you pay for the ads and then like, I'll wire you money every month. And like stuff like this, that just got like so difficult. And, it sucked too, because you're not building an asset with that. It's just like pure arbitrage, and it works for a while and then it breaks and you start from zero. And so I was happy enough to get out of it by the end.
I'm assuming the offers that were promoted were kind of higher ticket, more borderline stuff, or maybe recurring revenue stuff like boner pills and high testosterone supplements and things.
Shit like that. Yeah. And like skincare creams and like diet pills and like, all the classic affiliate stuff.
All the classic ones.
People are, all the classics.
Nice. And before we jump into your expertise of link building, I wanted to ask you about the current Google core update that's going on right now. Have you seen, I guess, any trends within maybe the sites you manage or maybe your own sites, or any insight into maybe what you believe might be going on?
The last like 18 months, 2 years of updates, I've almost stopped looking at them just because it's so difficult to pick up any sort of patterns. It's like, it's so close to, there's so many variables, or like it's so close to random that I don't even find any like value in trying to analyze it. And it's like fair play to the people who do try and do analysis and come up with some conclusions. But anytime I read a list of conclusions, I think like, okay, in like 5 minutes, like you've put whatever trend together in 5 minutes, I can find like the opposite trend and like find examples of where yours isn't true. And that's the case for like any sort of conclusion you could come up with, I feel like. And so, for me, I don't look at it that much, but like generally, I think what's been true in SEO like over the years is still true now. It's like good content and good links and like well optimized content and good topical relevance and good internal links. And like I don't think it's rocket science really. I think it all still works pretty much as it has done. And I would say I think one of the general things that I've noticed, like just from listening to people and their experiences and what I've seen myself, is it does seem like Google is getting better at identifying good content. And I feel like they focus less on links now. And I mean, links are still very important, but they focus less on trying to like catch bad link building or something like that. I feel like that battle is like almost on pause. It's like links work and they're powerful and that's the way it is. And Google isn't fighting against that as much anymore because it's like they can win the bigger game, which is like, let's just figure out what is actually the best content. And I feel like they've made a lot of progress on that front lately. And that's, so that's kind of the broad strokes of how I think about SEO right now.
Well, let's go into the weeds then of link building. So you mentioned good links. What makes a good link? And then in terms of good links and quality, does it matter how many links? Are there certain links you can get where you can only need a few instead of having to get a whole bunch just to help rank? How do you go about that process?
Yeah. So I think you want a mix of quantity and quality. You hear some people go on either side of that argument. They either go all quantity or all quality, but I think you really need a mix. I don't know too much about like a small number of higher quality links or something like that. Again, there's just so many variables that it's hard to draw too many like hard conclusions around all of that. And I always like there's a principle or like a saying that I always say to my team at We Outreach, which is to focus on like the exceptional execution of simple strategies, because SEO is not complex. And if you try and overcomplicate it, you're just making yourself less effective, because the overcomplications like don't lead to anything, because any kind of theory you might come up with is just like unfalsifiable, and it makes your processes less effective. So that's generally the lens through which I look at link building. And in terms of like what is a good link, that's something that frustrates me about the link building industry in general, is that nobody ever defines it. Everyone just says, oh, you need high quality links, but nobody defines like what is a high quality link or what's not. And it's all based on opinions, basically. And some people define it very narrowly. They'll say like, oh, anything above like Dior, whatever, that's like the type of links that I want, or you know, whatever way people define these things. So the way we have a very specific way of defining link quality. So we're looking at like 6 or 7 different factors. And they're pretty much, again, it's like nothing super sophisticated, like looking at Dior and traffic, and also looking at the outbound link profile of the website to make sure it's not linking to too many like shitty places, basically. And then looking at like the traffic trends, like if it's going up or like if it's had a sudden drop, something like that. And the countries where it's getting that traffic, like is it mostly US, UK traffic, or is it like India and Pakistan and stuff like that? And then whether the site is super broad or kind of more narrow and focused. And basically we just put together like a spreadsheet tool, and to make looking at all of these factors as objective as possible. And so you can go in to the spreadsheet tool and just put in all these things, that the order traffic, like we have a way of like assessing the quality of the outbound links and so on. And then the tool kind of weights the factors with different levels of importance, and then at the end comes out with like either a pass or a fail grade for the link based on like how all these factors weight against each other. And so that's how we do it. And I think the tool, it does like two things well. One is that it kind of works with the fact that a link can be good for different reasons. Like you can have a link that has like high Dior and high traffic, and those are like compelling reasons to have that link. But on the other hand, maybe the relevance is not the best. It's okay, but it's not the best. But you would still like build the link because its redeeming features outweigh its sort of negative features, if that makes sense. And on the other hand, you could also have a link that from a site that's hyper relevant, and that's the good thing about it. But on the other hand, the DOR and traffic is kind of low. And so, but that's still a link that's worth building just for different reasons. And it was like for someone like me or yourself who has done this a lot, we can sit down and look at a site and very quickly know whether we want to build that link or not, just because we do these mental calculations of all these different factors just from looking at the site. But it's hard across our team, that's like around 20 people now, to have because they all need to have the same opinion of a website across all, yeah. all these people so that we're consistent in our output. And that's where the tool is kind of valuable. It like puts everyone on the same page. And rather than making decisions about each individual website or link, we make decisions about how to change the tool so that it gets the output that we want. So that's how I think about quality and kind of how we control it.
Yeah, I went through your video with that spreadsheet. It's really interesting, and I think it's quite good because obviously you can buy links through DR only, but obviously everyone knows DR can easily be manipulated through various Google redirects and Fiverr gigs and stuff like that. And then obviously you've got people will buy links just from traffic, but again, traffic can be manipulated when you rank for like Disney login that has like a million searches and you're on page 5. So that's another thing. Now, what's interesting I saw was you actually also, one of your, I guess, factors in that spreadsheet is the peak traffic versus the current traffic. So almost like a traffic drop. How do you see that as a factor in terms of a link quality?
So like if a website has dropped sharply in traffic, it's like, that's concerning because like has the website been hit by a Google penalty or like, and you know, I'm like less, really that is in there because many, many of our clients would say this to us. Like we used to build links without paying attention to the trend of the traffic, just like the level of traffic itself. And many times a client will come back and say, but like, okay, like 6 months ago, it had like a really, really sharp drop. Like, I don't want a link from that site. Mm. And so part of it is like what we think of the links and part of it is what the market wants or what our clients tell us that they want. And so this one is in there partially for that, but that is the reason that like a traffic drop kind of gives it's a bad signal about a website, let's say. But that said, like some people would say, okay, this website has had a sharp drop in traffic, but so we don't want to link there at all. But I think like, for example, if you used to have a website that, let's just use Ahrefs figures, had 100,000 traffic a month in Ahrefs, and now it has 20,000, that's like a really, really sharp drop. And like, there's something going on there. But it still has 20,000 traffic and okay, it's a third party metric and everything, and also you got to look at like where that traffic is coming from, check the pages and stuff. But if all of that is fine, then it's like, it's still a significant amount of traffic that the website is getting. And so we factor it in, but we wouldn't like write off a link entirely. And that's what I like with the tool, that's kind of the way it works. It's like, we like assign or subtract points for each of those different factors based on the performance of each factor. So if it has a sharp drop, then that's like it loses a few points. And so if it's a sharp drop in addition to like maybe like the DOR is a bit low or like the relevance is not the best or the outbound link profile isn't the best, then that might push it over the edge into like a fail, into like a link that we wouldn't build. But if it's a sharp drop and everything else about the site looks good, then we're probably still gonna build the link. It's another factor that we look at. It's just, if there's a sharp drop, I think it's just a bad signal. I think that's the long and short of it.
What I want to know, and what listeners may want to know as well, with the outbound link profile, do you want to maybe give some examples of what would be poor, you consider poor outbound links for the link building? And two, I guess, how many is too many? Because there's a lot of niches and sites. For example, let's say sports. A lot of sports and sports news sites will link out to gambling, casino links, because that's kind of part of their market, I guess, and a way for them to make money. So inevitably, if you're going to get a link from a sports or a news site, something like that, you're probably going to have outbound links to gambling, casino. So just want to maybe give some more examples of what you would consider those outbound links, and then maybe how many is too many, or is there a ratio or something you use to calculate that?
So the way that we look at it is we picked like a few niches that are like kind of highly correlated with like link farming type of websites, let's say. So like gambling is actually one of them, or like casino, like CBD, I think VPNs. My team actually put this together, and the way we put this tool together was like we took like a 1,000 websites or something, and we tried different variations of the tool and like filtered the list based on these different variations of the tool and came up with like what's the best output. And what we saw, like the reason that we chose these industries, VPN, gambling, CBD, stuff like that, it's not that there's anything wrong with those ones specifically. They're just, if you see links to those industries in an outbound link profile, they're just strong signals that the rest of the outbuilding profile of the of that website is going to be particularly iffy as well.
That could be touchy. So, okay.
Yeah. So we just look at each of those, and the way we do it, like the Ahrefs outbound links report in the sheet that we have, it just like you put in the URL of the link you're analyzing, and it will like generate the Ahrefs links, and you can just click each of them, and it will go to the outbound link report for that URL with the keyword for each of these niches put in. And you just do that one by one, and we just take account of like how many times each of those keywords has been found in the outbound link profile links, and then we're just using that as a signal, and then it's built into the rest of the tool. So,
gotcha.
For example, if it like if it links to like gambling a handful of times and CBD a handful of times and like so, like VPNs or essay writing sites a handful of times, then that's like that it loses a lot of points in the tool for that, because it has like a strong pattern of like linking out to like these low quality gotcha. Places. And that's kind of how we look at it. There's always like exceptions, like the tool handles like, you know, 95% of cases or something. But if it's a case, like you said, like a sports website, and it makes more sense that they would kind of link to gambling sites or something like that, then we can kind of make an exception on a case by case basis. But generally that's how we look at it. And I would say you asked like how many is too many, and I think that's a really good question, because it's some people have the mindset of like, oh, I found a single link to a CBD site on this website, so it's dead to me forever, like I never want to link from this website. And if you do that, like every website has a link to a CBD site. Like if you have that approach, you're just gonna kill your potential to build any amount of links. And so you need to kind of think about it that way. And there is some sort of threshold in there. And it's like, but it's hard to put a specific figure on it. And it's also balanced against the other factors. Like if the website performs really, really well in the other quality factors, then you can be a little bit more forgiving in terms of like the outbound link profile. So that's how we think about it.
Nice. Then before we go into some outreach stuff, the other issue I think a lot of people have, and stuff that I've run into as well, is say you find a site, I don't know, amazing metrics, DR80, hundreds of thousands of traffic, whatever it is, and you go to get a link, but the page offered is say a 500 word orphan page, doesn't rank for any keywords, has no traffic, maybe has some other links on it. How do you go about placing the link for these sites? Are you taking pages like that? Are you requesting extra things to try and power up that page? Is a page on a site like that that is getting no traffic still worth getting a link back to your site?
I think the page itself matters a lot, and like the type of page you described there, like we wouldn't really like a link on a page like that, like an orphan page or something that's like clearly bad. And I think guest posts are really, really good for this reason. Like we use a lot of guest posts because you can like control the content of the page entirely, and you can do things too. Like, well, so firstly, you control the content, you get the title on the page, you build like the perfect relevance, like perfect context for your link, perfect anchor text that you want. And then also like after you send the guest post, you can like suggest internal links that the website might add, like find, you know, three or four other articles on their website and say like, hey, I'd really appreciate it if you could add links here. Or like you can build that into the deal as well. Like, hey, you know, if you're paying like $50 to have the post placed, you can offer like another, I don't know, $10 or $15 to try and make this part of the deal as well, to like make the link better. And so, yeah, I think the page matters a lot. And if it's a case where we're like the way that we do outreach is we'll start with some sort of pitch in our initial outreach, whether it's like just wanting kind of like a niche edit, like, hey, we want a link on this like specific page you have, or we'll start by pitching a guest post. But the first thing we want is always to just get like replies from good websites. And once we get the reply, we know, okay, now it's worth spending a little bit more time on this person, because we know they're going to engage with us, like, and actually talk to us And then you can go and look at the website specifically and think like, okay, is this page actually where we want the link? And if it's not a good page, then it's like, okay, let's do a change of tactic and like, let's try and get a guest post instead, because that's going to make more sense and get a better link for like this specific website. So yeah, you kind of need to take it on a case by case basis, I think. And I think also just like thinking a bit critically and creatively, like, you can try and put together deals that make sense. Like if they're not interested in guest posts and the only thing they're going to do is like offer you a link on this like one orphan page, like you can try and work around that and negotiate and say like, okay, that's not ideal, but like, what if I send Drew 200 words of content to like add some relevance to this page and my link will be within that and you can add that. And like, maybe you got to pay extra for that or whatever. And then like, or asking if you can add more internal, if they can add internal links to the page, because they can, most website owners, not most, but like many can understand this too, that like they know that it's more valuable to have like a page that is not an orphan page. And so if you think a bit critically as well, you can put a deal together that makes sense for you.
Nice. And when you're doing these guest posts, well, obviously you talked about a lot about relevance there. How closely relevant would you make the post to the post you're trying to link to? So if, as an example, let's say an easy one, maybe like, can dogs eat X food? Or maybe can dogs eat carrots, as an example. Would you guess post can dogs eat carrots on their site to almost have perfect relevancy? Or would you kind of go a little broader, so almost like you're not competing against yourself maybe with the same article?
Probably I think slightly broader is better. Also because like, if you just think about what makes the most sense, just from like a content perspective, it doesn't really make sense to like, for you to be writing an article about one thing and then reference another article that's like on the exact same topic, like basically recovering the same thing. I think it makes much more sense to have an article that's about like what for the guest post article to be about like, I can't remember the exact example that you said, but let's say it's something to do with like what food to feed your dog, or like feed your dog for a certain issue or something like that. And then maybe the guest post article is about, it's a broader article about like how to maintain a healthy diet for your dog or something. Mm. And that would be like about more things than just like the food, but the food is like one section of that article.
Gotcha.
And you can link out. And I think the relevance is like the page level relevance is really, really important. And then like the page section relevance is also really important as well. And you can be a bit broader about it as well. So obviously, like when you first start guest posting, you want to find websites that are as closely related to yours as possible. But eventually, like, you run out of prospects. If you're trying to like scale up your link building, like if you have a gardening website, there's only so many other gardening websites that you can email to try and get a guest post or a link. And I think the other really nice thing about guest posting is that you can do like cross niching, where like you can slowly start to expand to other similar niches. So for example, a gardening website, you could, after you exhaust the other gardening websites, you could outreach to like websites about senior care or senior living, something like that. And you can use the topic of the guest post to bridge the relevance gap between you and the other websites. So you pitch an article that's like about why gardening is a great activity for seniors or something like that. Mm. And then, so the article is about the core topic of each of the websites. So you have the relevance match. And then within there, you could link to like some, like you would build the relevance for some specific page on your gardening website. So within the specific section of that article, you build the relevance and have like a nice natural link there. So yeah, guest posts are awesome. If I haven't talked about them enough already, like we use them a lot, and I think they're so good to get, like they help. It's difficult to build high quality links, and like when you can fully control the page, it helps a lot, both in terms of the quality and quantity as well. But like cross niching, you'll basically never run out of opportunities.
It's funny, you run into two camps: some people that just love niche edits and that's all they do, and then some that love the guest posts. So always talking to both. But the other question is, I guess, with the guest posting, are you writing these on keywords that could potentially rank for the guest post, or are you just writing it so you can get some internal links to it to pass juice through?
Mm. I think in an ideal world, they would all be targeting a keyword for two reasons. One is like, you can use that as a point of leverage with the like you can use it to make your guest post pitch more appealing to the website to make it more likely that they actually take it on, because obviously like if you have a chance of generating traffic for them, that's like really, really, really valuable for them. And then also it's good for you, because a page that is getting, that's ranking and getting traffic is probably also like, you would probably also generate like organic clicks to the page that you're linking to from the guest post if it's ranking and getting traffic. And obviously that's really good to both the traffic and like some amount of organic clicks. So in an ideal world, I think that would be the way to do it. In reality, you can only do that a certain portion of the time. Sometimes like there's just no suitable keywords that are like some, if it's a competitive niche, like all the keywords are just super competitive, or like the website, if it's a big website, like they've already covered, like they've already covered it, or stuff like that. Like there's many reasons why it's just not possible sometimes. So if it is possible, it's definitely better to do it. If it's not possible, then it's just about finding a topic that makes sense where you can do the relevance match and get some internal links and stuff. So yeah, but I really like that. Whenever it's possible, it's really awesome to do that. And I think you can use tactics like that to convince websites that wouldn't otherwise be open to doing guest posts, because everyone just sends out the same like shitty spammy guest post requests like all day long, and they see like 20 of them in their inbox and they're like, I don't care. But you can stand out if you say like, no, actually I'm serious. Like we're not just the same usual spam. Like we do a better job than this. And like one of the ways we're going to do a better job, like the content's going to be awesome. We're going to agree a topic with you that you love and that makes sense for your website. We're going to match the tone of the content on your website, like all these things. And then also another point is like, we're actually going to like get you traffic. Like we're going to target this keyword. We're going to optimize for this keyword, and we're going to aim to get you traffic for this. And like, that's another part that is like, can be really, really compelling. And like, yeah, win some links from websites that wouldn't otherwise be interested. So it's a good question. It's a nice tactic to use whenever it's possible.
Yeah, for sure. Are you ever linking these guest posts straight to money pages, or are you just hitting supporting pages and linking through?
Yeah, it depends on what the client wants, but yeah, so, sometimes money pages. And I think that's one, another guest post is so awesome, but I think like the ability to be able to link to money pages is one of the reasons that they are awesome, because it's really, really difficult to get links to those pages. Like if you're trying to do niche edits, for example, it can be really difficult to get a nice natural link on like a relevant page. Whereas if you're doing a guest post, like you literally control the whole page. Like you can make the perfect page to get like the perfect link placement for, even for a money page. And so if the website is willing to let you like link to that money page, then guest posts are a great way to do that. And in cases where like some clients we work with where they want links to like specific pages, and you know, with any new client, it's easy to get up and running because they're like fresh to us. Like we've never done any outreach for them before, and like we can always make things happen. But over time, like especially if you've clients that want like 20 or 30 links a month, like it doesn't take very many months of doing that before it gets much more difficult. And especially for like targeting money pages. And sometimes the team will come to me and say like, hey, Jason, like we're struggling with this client. Like, what can we do? Like, it seems impossible. And my answer is always just like, it's never impossible. Like you just need to do more guest posting and like start to factor in cross niching. And like, if you do cross niching and guest posting, like you'll never run out of prospects. And even for money pages, like you can always just build the perfect relevance for like whatever the link is. And so yeah, you can definitely link to money pages, I guess. And nice. It's one of the best uses of guest posting. One of the only link building strategies I think that's actually like you can use consistently to link to money pages.
Nice. And you've mentioned a few times about the perfect page and the perfect, I guess, link placement and relevance within that page. How does that look to you then? How does the guest post, I guess, does it differ to maybe just a normal SEO blog post then in terms of what you're doing there? Maybe I'll let you just go on about this. So where do you place the link on this page, and what's perfect to you with this guest post?
Yeah. So, I mean, basic things in terms of like, it's mostly about building the relevance. So like if you can have some sort of relevant phrase in the URL, in the title of the page, and in the headings of the page, subheadings of the page, and then having within all of this in in whatever, wherever makes the most sense within the article, having your link within a section that also has contextual relevance around it. Mm-hmm. So like the paragraph before and the paragraph with the link and the paragraph after, it's like, it's all relevant to like wherever the page you're linking to is. And like the page you're linking to is a natural expansion of whatever is being discussed in those paragraphs. Mm-hmm. I don't really have too many thoughts on where on the page the link should be, like whether it should come like earlier in the page or later in the page. I mean, if I was sitting down to do it myself, probably I would want it like earlier in the page. But I think the team, we don't pay too much attention to that. We're just trying to build like the best link placement that we can. Mm. And yeah, other than that, just like a simple content page that looks like, ideally that doesn't look like a guest post, like just looks like another page of content that's on the website that like fits in with the style of the website, with the writing style of the website, with the theme and topic of the website, obviously. And then just trying to make a link that like appears as natural as possible on that page. And then also having a few other links on the page too, like three or four other links to other sort of high authority places that make sense for the article.
Gotcha. And then, are you varying the anchor text much for these pages, or are you hitting a lot of exact match anchors, or are you never hitting exact match anchors?
Probably never hitting exact match anchors for money pages, at least. The team basically has like quite a lot of freedom to come up with anchor text, and it's like most of the other things. Like, we don't try and get super fancy or sophisticated with it because I don't think it's necessary, frankly. And so what we're trying to do is just come up with an anchor text that makes the most relevant sense possible and also avoids raising any red flags. So I remember this thing a few years ago where like I think people were getting manual penalties for overdoing anchor text that was like using best whatever in the keyword, like best x in the keyword. And so particularly around those pages, we will be quite careful, like commercial money pages, we would be quite careful not to have too many like exact match keywords in that anchor text. But mostly we're just trying to keep it natural and mix it up, and sometimes mix in like some generic things like click here or like this article or like stuff like that. Sometimes mentioning the brand, and yeah, really just trying to mix it up. But most of the anchors are like some sort of relevant phrase that makes sense, that like fits within the article where we're building the link. But we don't have like ratios that we're targeting or yeah, things like that. Just make it look natural and mix it up is the basic thing.
Nice. And when and how are you deciding whether a site needs homepage links versus inner page links? Because obviously a lot of people probably coming to your link button, whatever, want links straight to their money pages or supporting pages, but maybe they don't have enough, I don't know, branded anchors towards their homepage stuff. So is there a simple way you decide what they need?
Yeah. So most of our clients actually just want, we call it like our authority building package, which is just like we build links to like any page on the website. And so they come to us and they just like it's like grow my authority. Like that's basically it. And so we just choose whatever page has the most potential to build high quality links. So like whatever page we can get like the most prospects for, or like get the highest quality links for, that's how we're initiating our outreach campaigns. And then we're really just doing that again. Like we're not thinking too much about how we spread the links through the site. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes, and it also depends on the conversation with the prospect. Like if we find a prospect and like they want to mention us, like mention our client, like by their brand name for some reason, like that kind of makes the most sense sometimes to link back to the homepage. And so we'll do that. Or like if a link to a content page makes more sense, then we'll just do that. And so I would say like we treat the homepage just like we would any other page on the website. If we can build a high quality link and we need it to be to the homepage to like get that link, then we're going to do that. And yeah, similar to the anchor text, really, I think it's worth just like spreading the links through the website, like in whatever way makes sense. But I think it's a good question too, because I would say the homepage like is a little bit different because, and the reason I say that is like Google, like if you look at most websites in Ahrefs, like look at the link patterns, most websites have like a lot of links to their homepage, like a lot more than other pages on the site. And I think that's a really obvious pattern for Google to see, like the algorithm sort of, I think can, it's a strong signal for the algorithm to learn that like, okay, a normal high quality website has like a lot of links to the homepage. And so you don't want to raise any red flags by like having too many links to your inner pages and like not enough to your homepage, for example.
Yeah.
So I think it is worth paying a little bit more attention to the homepage for that reason.
Nice. And let's dive into as well, I guess what holds most people back from building links is the outreach portion of it. Or maybe not holds them back as such, but maybe they just don't find success doing it. Because as you mentioned, people are getting spammed with 20 plus emails a day asking for guest posts and links. So I guess the first question is, how do you separate yourself from the crowd when doing your outreach? And then I guess, how do you do it in a way that essentially not guarantees success, but is more successful than just the typical, I guess, messages that a lot of people receive?
Yeah, so it's the same thing again. It's like exceptional execution of like simple strategy. So there's nothing super sophisticated. It's like the messaging is one part. I'll talk about that in a second. But actually, even before you get to the messaging, like the biggest thing is building a prospect list and like getting your emails delivered to those prospects. So like building a prospect list where we don't use like a lot of people. I mean, I don't think anyone actually still does this these days, but if you look at any blog post about how to do guest posting, you'll see like, search for like this search term of like guest post plus like your keyword in air quotes and stuff like that. And I think like the only things you're going to find these days for those sorts of searches, because they're so well known, are just like shitty like link farm sites that are just ranking for those keywords specifically because they know people are going to email them and like want to pay them to get a link there. So you need to be more sophisticated when you're finding your prospects, and you can do that in a few different ways. Well, the easiest way is like is scraping Google or using Ahrefs, and like all of our campaigns start with a list of keywords actually. So if we have a gardening website and we want to do outreach to other gardening websites, we'll go and find like one of the biggest gardening websites that we can, put them into Ahrefs and look at their keywords report. And then like you can pull that list of keywords, and if you scrape Google for that list of keywords, like all of the keywords are about gardening because you found them from looking at what a gardening site ranks for already. And then of course from those you get like more gardening websites that are also ranking for those keywords, and then you can take those gardening websites, look at those in Ahrefs, see what keywords those other gardening websites rank for, find even more gardening websites by scraping Google for those. And so that's not exceptionally sophisticated, like I said, but actually having the right tools in place to do this and to be able to scale it up, like doing a good job of that is where it becomes difficult. The other thing you can do is to, like what we would also do in this case is all these websites that we find, we would also look at the link profile of those websites and like add anyone who links to those websites already, add those into our prospect list as well, because they're probably also going to be relevant. And so with this, you can build like a big, like raw list of prospects. And then from there, you can just start going through like the contact finding process, like finding the email, the best person to contact and the email for that person for all of these, and then just start like emailing out that way. Or another step that you can add in before that, which adds a lot of labor but also improves the quality a lot, is to just like manually go through one by one and just like filter them like very quick, like 20 second checks. Like, is this a good website and is it relevant? And just go through each and like, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And then so either way is viable. Then you go find the contact information. And so with all of these steps, I think we're just doing them a little bit better than everyone else. So finding the contact information, like again, a lot of people these days just grab the list of domains, put it into hunter.io or whatever, like whatever emails they find, like that's cool. They take those and then just like email them out. And like you're emailing the exact same email addresses that like hundreds of other people or thousands of other people probably every month are finding through like the hunter.io database. So if it's the only email you can find, like sometimes it makes sense. But what we do is like we'll look for, we'll like look at the company on LinkedIn. We'll try and find like who's the best person to contact, like based on what we can see on LinkedIn, or look at the website, or like betterbusinessbureau.org or whatever, like go and look at the company listing there, see who's listed, like all these ways to like find out more about the company and who works for it. And then finding email addresses from all that information that aren't listed on hunter.io. So like if you use like an email permutator, like you put in the domain, you put in like the person's name that you found, the permutator will make like 10 or 15 different versions of the email address. And you just put those through an email validator, and pretty often like one of those versions is going to be valid. And then it's like you got it's like you have an email, and it's not one that comes from hunter.io. So like it's going to be like a less spammed email address, let's say. And so, yeah, doing that for everyone just to make sure you get the best contact information is another good thing. And so all of those small things set you up with like a good prospect list. And then from there, the next thing is making sure you get delivered to the inbox. That one is also pretty tricky. And the main thing is that you need to have other activity on your email account, basically. So if you can, the best thing it would be to use like your main email account that you're also using for like communicating with your clients, or like you have like all of your accounts signed up with that email account or whatever, just to get any sort of activity on that email account, because it's going to have like a higher score in the eyes of the mailbox providers of the people that you're emailing. So you're less likely to get caught up in their spam filters, because yeah, it's a lot of people do a good job of putting together a prospect list, and then they just send it out with Mailshake on a brand new email account, and it just all goes into spam because you haven't built up like enough history, like a positive track record. So yeah, you that's an important one. To you really got to manage that carefully. Start your email sending slow, like warm it up slowly. Also, like all of our accounts, we like test the deliverability once a week. Like there's a tool called Glock Apps, and basically it helps. Like it gives you a bunch of test email addresses, you email them all, and it will tell you like which providers you're in the inbox for and which ones you're going to the spam folder for. So we do that for all of our accounts once a week, just to make sure our deliverability is actually good. So that's a major one to get right. Like it doesn't matter how good your emails are if they're not getting into the inbox, basically. And if you have all of that in place, and you do a good job with all of that, then the actual messaging of the template is where is the next kind of step. And we don't, I've never found it worth it to fully personalize every single email every single email for each individual prospect, just because it's so much work to like look at the website and like come up with a witty line about like their products that they have or something like that. It's too much time, and no matter what you do, like you're only going to get like 15 to 20% of people responding to you anyway, whether you send a fully personalized email or an email that's like, you know, bulk personalized. So like you take some time to like in your prospect list, like type out the name of the company nicely or something like that. And also make sure that you have the prospect list segmented so that you can write a bulk template, but it's relevant to like, you know, the 100 people that you're emailing, because like, for example, they're all gardening websites. So you can kind of bulk personalize in that way. That's an important thing. And the biggest thing when you're writing the templates is to avoid appearing like a bulk email, because everyone gets so many bulk emails these days. And if you have any of the obvious flags, for example, like saying like, hey, I've been a big fan of yours for a long time. Like it's such a generic and simple thing to say. And straight away, anyone who reads that, like they've already been told that, that they've already had 10 fans email them already in their inbox that day. And so it's like, okay, like whatever. And so, yeah, you need to avoid that. And so being creative with the template to make sure that you're hitting that point is an important part. And then I think the biggest thing after all of that, like once you email someone and then you get the response from them, like now you have a conversation going, then it's when you can actually like make a deal, like get something in motion. And so the first thing you need to do is like inspire them to reply. And then after that, you need to, I think you should really focus on providing value to the prospect, because the way that outreach link building used to be, like in 2016, 17, 18, and it's slowly changing. I mean, a lot of people still do it this way, but it was basically like begging for a link, or basically like asking for a favor, or like, okay, I can give you $50, but it's still basically coming and saying like, hey, please give me a link. And people, I think, are just like really jaded with that approach now. And also good quality websites aren't really interested in just like taking the $50. Like the websites that you really want links from, like they don't really need your $50. Like they already are probably successful with SEO themselves, or they have a successful business, and they don't want to undermine their like editorial integrity just for your $50 yeah. or whatever. So you need to find a way to appeal to them in a different way. And listen, we pay for a lot of links, so sometimes it is the $50 that is what's valuable to that person, but obviously only if the website fits your quality standards. But a guest post can also be the thing, like we talked about earlier, doing a guest post in a way where like, okay, we're going to get you traffic, like we're going to write in the style of your website, like all these things that make that like really actually valuable for that person. Or I really like three-way link exchanges as well, because if you think about the websites that would be like awesome links, like the websites you really want a link from, they're like we talked about, like established websites, big websites, already getting a lot of traffic. Like they don't care about your guest post, they don't care about your $50. What they do care about is their own SEO and like link building as a part of that. And so if you can come to them and say, hey, if you link to me, like I'll get you a link from like another website that is just as awesome as yours, that's something that will like make them sit up a bit straighter and is actually interesting for them, because it's like so valuable. And once you get the conversation going, I think that's the main thing, is like focus on how can you provide them as much value as possible. That's the first focus. And then the second focus is, okay, after I've satisfied you, then yes, can I have a link in return, please? And that's different. Like, I think that kind of sounds obvious, but if you take that mindset, and you start communicating in that way, it actually gives you access to like a different segment of prospects that you're emailing. So let's say you build a raw prospect list and it has 100 prospects, like 15 of those, let's say, are just going to be link farms that are just going to reply to you and say, yes, please, $50, thanks, no problem. And so that's like the old style of outreach. Like mostly you're going to, like, it's easy to build those 15 links. But then there's another like 15 people that you can get to reply to you if you offer them something different. And these are the people that they don't care about the $50, but they do care about other things. And if you can find out what they care about and offer that to them, then you can get links, more valuable links, and like more rare links from this other segment of people. And not, you don't need every link from like that other segment of people. And like the links from the first segment that I talked about, like the $50 people, like it's like 90% gray area, and there's like exceptions for all these different rules and stuff like that. And so some links, some of these like $50 links or whatever can be good. And there's people who like, they do care about their editorial standards, and they're not going to link out to anyone who asks, but they still do want, you know, $50 or $60 when they are going to link out, even though it's combined with like maintaining their editorial standards. So, it's kind of about how it averages out across the whole link profile that you're building, I think. And so, yeah, really you just want a mix of things.
Nice.
I feel like that was a bit of a ramble, but I hope I answered.
That was good. You could do your solo podcast after that one. That was like a 10-minute monologue. I like it. But I wanted to finish on this one question, is how do you go about getting the big editorial links? Because reaching out to some of these big teams is difficult. I mean, I've tried to even just reach out to some of these things and you don't ever hear a reply. I don't even know if I'm getting the right person or anything like that. So is there a process you go through? Is it a different process, or is it the same process that you just talked about there when you're looking for like the big websites?
Yeah. I think that's something that's much easier to do when you're like an individual, when you're doing link building for your own website, because if you have your own website, and especially if you're more than just like a niche website, like you have some other type of business, like let's say an e-commerce business where you also have a blog and you're sort of involved in SEO, like you have other things, like you have suppliers, or you have like people who like you can send your product to and ask them to review and like link back to it and all these types of things. You have like a lot more options to like really go for these big editorial links. For us as an agency, we don't do that much of it because we can't, like we don't have access to all of these things, and like we don't work closely enough with each client to sort of like, okay, like give us a list of your contacts and your suppliers, and also like, you know, give us your background so that we can sort of leverage your kind of personality to try and get links from these other places. And so it's a bit of a different game. I think, I think this is more where it comes down to like just sitting down and thinking critically about like what sort of contacts you have with other websites and really just trying to think about like how you can slowly build relationships over time that eventually end up in a link, because that's another thing. Like for us, we're working with clients like just, you know, on month to month retainers, and we don't have as much incentive to like really focus on like these longer term relationship building links. But if you're doing your own SEO and link building, like you can afford to like build these relationships slowly and get links in the long run. So I think it's more about that sort of style of thing. Or also PR link building. We don't do too much of that, but I know a lot of people do it, and I've talked to a lot of people who do it. I think it's quite expensive, and there's definitely agencies that do it, but you know, it's probably going to cost $1,000 a link or more, unless you get lucky and a campaign really pops, and then maybe, you know, it's the cost per link is super small just because you get a ton of links. But for someone who doesn't want to do it themselves, I think, and if they have the budget and if it makes sense, I think an agency that does good PR link building could be an option too. It's probably overkill if you're a small website or not in a super competitive space when like normal guest post links would just get the job done. But I think that's how to approach it.
Yeah, nice. So if you are a bigger site, Niche Website Builders does a big digital PR, or does a lot of digital PR now. That's kind of like their bread and they've moved into that as their bread and butter, and they're getting some crazy results. So you guys can check that. The listeners can check that out too. But thanks for coming on, Jason. I appreciate you sharing your link building knowledge. Where can people find you?
Yeah, thanks again for having me. Yeah, weoutreach.com is the best place. I'm not so big on the socials or anything like that. So yeah, weoutreach.com, we're there, or you can email me at jason@weoutreach.com as well. And that's basically it.
Perfect. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, James.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.